I call this meeting of the House Education Policy Committee to order. Members, please take your seats. All right, I believe we have a quorum. Has anyone had a chance to look at the minutes? Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes from February 26th.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Moves approval of the minutes for Tuesday, February 26th. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes for the Tuesday, February 26th meeting are approved. Okay. So I hope you saw the notice. We did have Representative Christensen's bill removed from the agenda today. So we have three bills up, two of which are very, very similar. So what we're going to do is we're going to have Representative Wislawick's bill up first, because she has most of the testifiers, but then afterwards we'll lay that on the table and have Representative Grunhagen present his bill too. It's just drafted a little bit different. We'll have a little more discussion and lay that over, and then we'll move on to Representative Krish Pudin's bill. So, Representative Wislawick, would you like to go to the testifier table? Wislawick, sorry, I will get that eventually. Representative Wislawick, now that I can say your name properly, welcome. Would you like to introduce yourself? Actually, first, since you are a member of this committee, would you like to move your bill? My intention is to lay it over for possible inclusion. So you can go ahead and move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 945 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you. Representative Wislawick has moved House File 945 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Could you please proceed with your testimony?
Yeah, first of all, I just wanted to say thank you, Madam Chair. I was bummed to see Shelley pull her bill because my cousin was going to testify on that bill, who has the same last name as me, and it would have given people a lot of time to practice. Anyways.
Which is clearly neat.
thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Before you is House File 945. It's a non-public pupil textbook aid clarification bill. Essentially, it's just saying that teacher manuals should be included in the package in things that are paid for with non-public pupil aid for textbooks to make sure that we have the teacher guides included in with the textbooks so that we can have teachers and students kind of on the same page and having those resources together. For those who may not know, the state has a partnership with private schools, commonly known in our state laws as non-public schools. And the state annually dedicates a certain amount of non-public pupil aid to flow through the public school system to pay for services and things like these textbooks that we're talking about today. As times have changed, we haven't seen the statutes necessarily keep up, so we want to make sure that we're including things like the teacher manuals in that aid that these schools are getting. I have a few people here today who are going to testify. Who can give a little bit more detail about the need for the bill and help answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Wislawick. Go ahead and bring your first testifier up. Will you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tim Benz. I am the president of the Minnesota Independent School Forum. We are the largest statewide organization supporting the non-public schools in Minnesota, and I also have the privilege of serving as chair of the Non-Public Education Council through the Minnesota Department of Education. And want to thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 945. And thank you to Representative Wislawick for sponsoring this legislation. There are approximately 470 non-public schools in the state of Minnesota, serving about 65,000 students. And one area that's been bubbling up for many non-public schools is additional clarification and updating of the textbook portion of the non-public pupil aid statute. This program, since 1975, has been a wonderful resource to provide equitable resources for students in non-public schools, and these ensure that students have the necessary resources available to maximize their learnings. Since the establishment, as Representative mentioned, the establishment, several modifications have been made along the way as needed regarding current or recent trends, from videos to cassettes to CDs to electronic textbooks. Our hope is that a slight modification to the current statute will ensure a consistency and opportunity of these vital resources for students, and it's also been based on some market changes from vendors and publication providers. As you will hear from my colleagues who work directly with students, this slight change will assist in providing the necessary resources to the students and educators in the classroom, and we feel the spirit of the legislation still is intact. It's also more cost-efficient, and you'll hear a little bit about that. In closing, a similar piece of legislation, House File 428, will be presented today. Representative Gruenhagen, we are supportive of both pieces of legislation and look forward to working with the authors and MDE to find a common resolution to this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Benz. Go ahead and bring up your next testifier. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Karen Ballmer, and I serve as the lower and middle school principal at Minnehaha Academy in Minneapolis. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. Thank you, Representative Pozlawick. And I do thank you for this opportunity to address an issue that's relatively small and technical in nature, but does have significant impact for our learners. The language we're talking about today was first enacted by the Minnesota Legislature in 1975, and specifically the Declaration of Policy stated, it is the intent of the legislature by this amendment enactment to provide for distribution of educational aids, such as auxiliary services, instructional materials, and equipment, so that every school child in the state will share equitably in education benefits and therefore further assure all Minnesota students and their parents freedom of choice in education. So for the last 40 plus years, non-public schools have received support for instructional materials. At Minnehaha Academy, these funds do not cover all of our curriculum and instructional material costs, but they are a significant source of funding for us, which we deeply appreciate. When the authorizing language was enacted, the world was very different, including the resources available to schools to support the learners in their classroom. There was no internet at that time. There were no one-to-one devices, no learning management systems, and so on. The statute has been amended at various points since 1975 to reflect the changes in how we deliver instruction to students. For example, provision for CD-ROMs was added in 1996 and, quote, electronic books and other printed materials delivered electronically was language added in 2011. So we're at another juncture where the current language does simply not align with the way that curriculum is being developed and delivered to meet the learner needs of students today in 2019. So as such, we are increasingly unable to access these funds that have been set aside to support learners simply because the language does not reflect what we know today about best practice in terms of curriculum development. So this change does not stray from the original intent of the law. It's still about supporting students, just allowing us to do so in today's world of educational materials. So members of the committee, I thank you again very much for your consideration of this change. And I thought it might be helpful to hear from a curriculum director directly to give some examples of what this looks like in an actual school. So Madam Chair, if I may, I would welcome my colleague, if that's all right.
Yes, thank you, Principal Ballmer. Go ahead and come to the testifiers table, state your name for the record, and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Julie Wynn. I am the curriculum director at Minnehaha Academy, and it's my pleasure to be with you here this afternoon. More and more, we are finding that the best materials are inaccessible to us because the current language of the statutes, which define learning materials and textbook vendors, vendors are now frequently bundling online resources for teachers, which might include lesson plans, assessment tools, enrichment and reteaching materials, along with the student-facing portion. The statute currently restricts us from making these purchases with otherwise available funds that would be provided under the textbook subdivision. In the past year, we've had some instances where we were unable to make purchases of the desired curriculum because of these limitations. One example was a middle school science curriculum that was considered a really best practice tool. However, because the student materials also came bundled with teacher materials that included assessments, tools, professional development modules, and other resources that ensured that the student lessons would be delivered most effectively, it was determined that this would not be an acceptable resource according to the current law. We were unable to purchase it. As the person who works directly with vendors to develop bids and cost proposals, I've inquired whether these items could be separated and unbundled, but because of the way that they're developed from the ground up, we cannot do that. There is no option to opt out. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the materials that I'm describing to you are the very best that we can find. And to add to that, they are the most cost-effective. It is much more cost-effective and keeps materials current if we're able to access them through online electronic mechanisms rather than print textbooks. So in order to be most fiscally responsible with the dollars we've been given, we would need to be able to access these materials, and right now we end up spending more for things that are perhaps less effective because that's what the law allows for us to do. We sincerely hope that you will support this change in language. We believe it will allow greater freedom in our curricular selection and allow students access to the most current and modern resources and be cost-effective, more cost-effective than our current model. So thank you for your consideration in this matter.
Thank you, Ms. Nguyen. Representative Waslewick, do you have anything else to add?
Madam Chair, thank you. I just want to emphasize that this language change was included in the Omnibus Education Policy Bill last session. So to make sure that we're Representative Erickson's bill. So to make sure that we are recognizing that and including that in this year's bill as well.
Wonderful. Thank you. Members, any questions at the table? We have a little bit of time here, too. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this bill for or against? All right. Representative Waslewick, would you like to renew your motion?
Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion to have House File 945 included in the Education Policy Omnibus Bill.
Representative Waslewick renews her motion. We'll move lay House 945 over. And then Representative Grunhagen, would you like to approach and talk about House File 428? Welcome, Representative Grunhagen. Would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 428 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Education Policy Bill.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Go ahead and proceed and tell us why you why you carried this bill last year and what you like about it.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Yeah, I'm not going to recount again. I think the testifiers did a good job to explaining what the bill is about, and also Representative, I got to practice that one.
I think I found the key because it's a lot like my name. Say all three syllables with the same weight. So, you, Joachim, Waslewick. There we go.
Yeah, I think phonics is a good
I don't know
approach.
Why it took me 9 weeks to figure that out, but
I was trying to use whole language. It didn't work too good. Anyway, just a thought. Anyway, you know, when I look at my bill and compare it to her bill, basically our first page, even the line numbers, line up 100%. So if you simply take my first page off and you add my two pages behind it together, you got one of the nicest bipartisan bills of this session. Just a thought, okay? Anyway, the additional things, I would just draw members' attention to line 2.7, 2.11. This would be on the second page. And also on the third page, lines 3.4 to 3.7. And 3.12 and 3.13. If I went through that too fast, sorry about that. But you can catch up later. But, you know, basically it just eliminates or updates a few older language in the bill. Some of it, I was told, like the 2015-2016 language from 3.4 to 3.7 was actually obsolete. So that's the only thing that my bill does in addition to House File 945. So I really don't have anything else to say other than appreciate the opportunity to present it, and hopefully we can look at merging the two bills if that's appropriate.
Yes, of course, Representative Grunhagen. Thank you. Any questions at the table? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. It is always important that we take a look at language that's become obsolete and get it out of statute and update anything else that is not updated. So that's the reason that last year we included in this proposal that Representative Grunhagen carried and was included in the omnibus bill those changes. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Anyone else? Anyone in the audience wish to testify before or against this bill? Thank you. I think we're done here. Representative Grunhagen, and I'll move again that we lay House, well, I don't have to, we're laying House File 945 over. Thank you so much. And now we have, House File 428.
Yeah.
Haven't had enough coffee today. All right. So, Representative Kunesh-Budin, would you like to proceed with your bill? We have House File 824 next on the docket. Welcome, Representative Kunesh-Budin. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to move House File 824 to Increase Teachers of Color Act for possible inclusion.
Wonderful. Representative Kunesh-Budin's moved House File 824. I think you have an author's amendment as well, do you? No? Okay. Nope, I was looking at the wrong page. So, why don't you go ahead? Oh, sorry. I just was reminded we actually have to move your bill to Ways and Means. Mm. So, we have House File 824 in front of us. It's my intention to move it to Ways and Means when we're done. It does have an appropriation at quite a few different spots. So, that would just make sense. All right. So, would you like to proceed with your testimony? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for remembering needed to go to Ways and Means next. So I would like to begin by thanking Representative Mariani. He's not here just yet, who is our lead co-author, and I just want to show my appreciation for the strong bipartisan support for this bill. For this bill that builds on Republican efforts over the last couple of years, and that includes several members of this committee who have already signed on to the bill as co-authors, and we're hoping that more of you will sign on as well after you hear about this incredible package. This bill is a package of interconnected efforts to create system changes needed to finally start increasing the percentage of teachers of color in our state, which has been stagnant at 4% for the past decade, while the percentage of students of color has steadily increased from 24% to 34% over the past decade. Most importantly, this bill does several things better, different, needed, and backed by research to diversify our teaching force in order to narrow our state's persistent opportunity and achievement gaps, which are among the worst in the country. To highlight some of the most important aspects of this comprehensive bill, please look at your detailed bill summary, and it's a packet that is very colorful and has many facts on it. But if you would begin on the page with the four large colored circles, and as you can see, the sections of the bill are organized in this summary related to the three categories of efforts included in this provision that, number one, attract and prepare more teachers of color, number two, support more candidate completing preparation programs, and number three, increase retention of teachers of color. If you flip it over and look at the top of the top of the page in Section 4. Section 4 in this bill is important because for the first time it establishes a state goal to consistently and gradually increase the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in order to ensure that we are providing improved and equitable access to diverse teachers according to the 2016 state law. A state goal to increase teachers of color will also help address other established state goals related to the world's best workforce, achievement and integration, and higher education attainment. This section also has an important accountability aspect for establishing a biennial report on the impact of all state funding programs related to increasing teacher diversity.
In terms of increasing pathways to attract and prepare more teachers of color, as listed on page 2 of this bill summary, Section 13 strengthens and expands the types of grow-your-own programs and districts eligible for grants while codifying the program in statute rather than in the session law. Likewise, Section 12 codifies and expands collaborative urban and greater Minnesota educators of color program grants in statute rather than session law, while it clarifies all aspects of the program, including accountability measures, given that 2017 law stated all recipients have to complete for grants starting in fiscal year 2020. Section 15 allows students and districts to be eligible recipients of Intro to Teaching College in the school concurrent enrollment grants rather than just higher ed institutions. Sections 17 through 11 clarify eligible grantees and programming for the existing American Indian Teacher Program, preparation programs, and Section 6 establishes a Come Teach in Minnesota bonus. It's a grant program that would provide hiring and retention bonuses to licensed teachers of color from other states. And Section 24 establishes grants to conduct a teacher recruitment marketing campaign to encourage more people of color and American Indians to become teachers. The second category of bill sections listed on page 3 of the bill summary focuses on increasing financial support for diverse candidates to complete their teaching preparation programs while also being an incentive to choose teaching. Section 17 establishes aspiring Minnesota Teachers of Color Scholarship Program, and Section 18 provides important clarification to the Student Teacher Grant Program so that only the most significant licensure shortage areas by economic development region are eligible. The third category of this bill section, listed on page 4 of the summary, bill summary, focuses on increasing retention of teachers of color. As an educator myself and of American Indian descent, I know the challenges of entering and remaining in the profession within school environments that are predominantly white. Among the most important amendments in this bill is languages in sections 1, 2, and 16 that would require districts to have plans to ensure that curriculum, as well as the learning and work environments, are inclusive and respectful of all racial and ethnic groups. Such efforts are imperative to teachers of color and their retention efforts, as well as the engagement of all students and their parents. Furthermore, Section 3 would establish a new inclusive school enhancement program, grant program, to assist schools and districts in this very, very difficult work. Section 14 amends the teacher mentorship statute to include a focus on retention of effective teachers and various means that the grants can be used to support the retention of teachers of color. And in addition, sections 19 through 23 amend the Teacher Shortage Loan Forgiveness Program to double the amount per eligible year from $1,000 per year for 5 years to $2,000 per year for up to 10 years. And Section 5 allows schools to verify that teachers have the skills needed for their Tier 4 licensure. Finally, while the governor's budget related to increasing teachers of color is insufficient to change the percentage of teachers of color, it wouldn't cost anything to adopt all of the policy language in House File 824. Doing so will do much in itself to strengthen the programs and remove various barriers to teachers of color wanting to enter and remain in the profession. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh Badin. Do you want to proceed with your testifiers?
Yes, at this time I would like to invite up a number of testifiers.
I believe your first one on the list is Pierrette Hernandez Espinosa. Would you like to state your name for the record and proceed?
Okay. Madam Chair, my apologies. I have a joint statement. Again, thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Violeta Hernandez Espinosa, and I serve as Education Legislative Director for the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. I'm here to share a united message for the three state ethnic councils and the Indian Affairs Council in strong support of the Increased Teachers of Color Act, HF 824, as shared in our letter to the committee. I know that was going to be passed out. Before I continue, I'd like my colleagues to introduce themselves for the record from the Ethnic Councils and Indian Affairs Council.
Thank you. Go ahead and state your name for the record.
Hello, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Katie Sly, and I'm the legislative liaison for the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Shannon Gijik. I am the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As state agencies, we have the important role to advise and inform state lawmakers about our constituent communities and their needs. Currently, students of color and indigenous students represent 34% of all students in Minnesota. Over the past biennium, the top priority in education uniting our four councils has been the need to increase the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota. Addressing this severe shortage is key to narrowing our state's persistent achievement and opportunity gaps, which disproportionately impact our constituent communities. The 2019 Increased Teachers of Color Act is the result of a strong partnership among our four councils and the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. It is a comprehensive set of policy proposals informed by feedback from hundreds of parents, students, educators, and others from our communities over the past 2 years. We are also grateful for the 30 various organizations that have so far vetted and endorsed the bill, as you can see listed on the last page of the bill summary provided to you, and many are in this room today. We appreciate the leadership demonstrated by Representative Kunesh-Podein, Representative Mariani, and the many co-authors of this bill this year and supporters of the effort over the previous biennium for continuing to unite across party lines to address the severe shortage of teachers of color with this historic legislation. The councils, our communities, and the coalition have a sense of urgency with this issue. To put this year's effort into historical context, imagine a freshman in high school in 2016, the year the legislature and the governor amended several statutes to say that all students shall have equitable access to effective and diverse teachers. The same student this year may or may not be graduating this spring with the rest of her and his classmates, but not with improved access to teachers of color, which remains at 4% statewide. Research is clear that all students benefit from diverse teachers. However, research is also clear on the higher impact potential on students of color. We must be responsive to their needs. One-third of Minnesota students are of color and American Indian today, and we know that our student population will continue to diversify. We have conducted some research, and each of you can see the diversity of the schools in your district in the handouts you received today. Together, we can and must change the trajectory for these students. We must do different things as a state if we expect different results in narrowing these gaps, and HF 824 represents significant change. We strongly recommend that you fully support all of the policy language in the 2019 Increased Teachers of Color Act, which will strengthen program investments and address systemic barriers to recruiting, preparing, and retaining teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota. Thank you for your leadership in doing what is right.
Thank you, Ms. Hernandez. And then who is next? To go ahead and come up to the microphone and introduce yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Keenan Jones, and I'm a sixth grade teacher in the Hopkins School District, completing my fifth year of teaching. As a black male educator, the road to becoming a teacher was extremely tough. There were many nights where I felt like giving up. Student loan debt, no outside help, working a job, and taking care of my child made my role extremely tough. I had to depend on a social service agency to help me get through. It was an experience that I will never forget as I hit rock bottom, all to become a teacher to help inspire the next generation. So the scholarship program established in Section 17 of this bill would have been a great help to me and others that I know, along with the student teacher candidate grants. I'm also pleased to see that this bill will double the amount of loan forgiveness available to individual teachers, because the current $1,000 per year for up to 5 years has limited impact on our burdens of debt from college to become teachers. I also greatly appreciate Sections 1, 2, 3, and 16 of this bill, focusing on ensuring that districts have work environments and curriculum that are inclusive and respectful for all racial and ethnic groups. Being a one and only teacher of color in the building is stressful. Every day I go to work, I worry about who is spying on me, who is questioning me, who doesn't trust me. A teacher once told me the only reason I have great relationships with students is because I'm tall, strong, and black. I will never forget that time that a parent of a black boy stopped me in a parking lot to tell me how much he appreciated the fact that her boys had a black male role model. She then proceeded to talk about how much value I brought to the school. After that statement, I told myself I would continue to do research to perfect my craft, attend trainings, and work 50 times harder than the average teacher. That let me know that this is what I'm supposed to do. Some black men in education have to operate differently based on the demographics of the building. You have to have tough skin and be resilient, which black men are, and that is why we thrive in education. All staff need to be taught on a regular basis about being inclusive in work environments and understanding the ethnicities of those who are non-white. I also appreciate the focus on teacher mentorship and support for professional learning communities for teachers of color in Section 14. In my district, we see a need for support for teachers of color. I have been called on by district-level staff to lead a group called New Teachers of Color in Hopkins, giving them an opportunity to learn how to navigate our school system. In sum, this bill is a great comprehensive effort to address the needs of people of color, preparing to be teachers, and keeping teachers of color in the profession, making a difference in the lives of all of our students. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Please proceed with your testimony. State your name and proceed.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Angelina Momani, and I'm an ESL teacher in Anoka Hennepin School District. I'm here to speak in support of House File 824. I've been teaching for 3 years, and I'm a member of the Anoka Hennepin Teachers of Color Coalition. Our group is a grassroots collective of self-organized teachers of color that seeks to retain teachers of color. We work to intentionally support each other through mentorship, advocacy, and partnering. Specifically, as teachers of color, we saw the challenges of being racially isolated in our field and wanted to help build a network that would help us navigate these challenges and pursue our vision for educational equity by supporting students and amplifying the voice and agency of teachers of color. We have presented at national conferences about our work, and teachers of color in other districts have asked for guidance in starting similar collectives. The provisions and grant program in Section 14 would greatly support our efforts, as well as the efforts of teachers of color in other districts, to work collectively. Mentorship from teachers of color has been essential to my development as a teacher. As a student teacher, I was fortunate to have a cooperating teacher of color. I was a member of the inaugural cohort of the Anoka Hennepin Teachers of Color Coalition's Student Teaching Mentorship Program. As I was implementing my practice for the first time, I was able to have explicit conversations about my being a teacher of color. My mentor not only helped me explore the field, develop affirming relationships with other teachers of color, and refine my teaching skills, but also helped me navigate the unique challenges teachers of color face in the workplace. As a teacher candidate and as a practicing teacher, I've experienced many of the injustices common to teachers of color, like issues navigating the opaque bureaucratic systems of hiring and tenure, microaggressions, and feeling silenced when I speak on racial justice issues. Her counseling and the relationships I have formed within the Anoka Hennepin Teachers of Color Coalition continue to be an invaluable source of support as a probationary teacher up for tenure next year. Finally, becoming a teacher has been very expensive. I owe tens of thousands of dollars for my degree. I received my degree at a time when there were few grants and scholarships for teachers of color in graduate programs. These financial pressures amplify other challenges I face as a teacher of color. Fears around finding and keeping a teaching job often feel overwhelming. Last week, I received my first teacher shortage loan repayment grant. House File 824 will help to alleviate the financial strain most teachers of color endure to become highly qualified professionals by increasing the amount of loan forgiveness and establishing scholarships for aspiring teachers of color so that they don't have to carry as much debt. Thank you for your support of House File 824.
Thank you, Ms. Mamani. And then whoever's next, come up and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stacey Aguilar, and I'm an early Head Start teacher at Parents and Community Actions Head Start in Minneapolis. I'm here to tell you my story on how I and my family had benefits from PICA's Growing Our Own program. I was born in California. My parents moved to Minnesota in search for better job opportunities. I grew up in a Mexican culture, being the youngest of five siblings. I had my first child at age 19 and was married the same year. With just a high school education, I had to work at a young age, supporting my family. A year later, I had my second child, and I had to stop working because my daughter had pneumonia as a newborn, and I lost my job. 2 years later, with another baby on the way, I had an opportunity at PICA Head Start in Minneapolis, not only for my children, but to begin my career path to become a teacher. I started as a Head Start parent, participating in PICA's parent training programs, where I worked in an early Head Start and Head Start classroom, completing two 96-hour training programs. With this training, I learned basic job requirements necessary to work with children. I completed this training and decided that this was something that I wanted to pursue. So I applied to be a parent intern in PICA's internship program. Working with infants and toddlers, I work full-time in early Head Start classrooms. Learning what it takes to be a teacher, how to do lesson plans, and interact with children. During this time, as a part of the internship, I was able to attend PICA CDA program, a national credential early childhood certification. This credential included 120 hours of training, 450 hours of classroom experience, writing a portfolio, and passing a test. After completing my CDA and internship, I was hired to be a teacher at PICA in the early Head Start program. I began my career at PICA working with homeless children and now working in PICA's training center, where I help train new teachers in early Head Start, teaching them about adults and children interaction and working with families. I am very lucky to work in a very diverse program where the staff reflects the children and family, both in culture and language. I am currently in a classroom with 100 of the children are children of color. Having diverse teacher is very important for me and my son and my daughters. I want them to be with teachers who look and talk like them. My oldest children graduated from Head Start. My son is now in third grade, and my other daughter in first grade, and both are doing very well. My youngest daughter attended PICA, now loves coming to school, and will be going to kindergarten in the fall. As a parent, these training opportunities and getting my CDA has changed my life for better. I started out on Minfit struggling financially, not knowing what I could do, to now being off Minfit, financially supporting my children with plans to start college to obtain my bachelor's degree. which I will be the first in my family to do. Obtaining my degree would also allow me to advance in my career, joining more than 100 other fellow teachers who have their early childhood bachelor's degree. Each year, PICA supports and celebrates an average of a dozen teachers who graduated with bachelor's degree. At PICA, we are not only giving a head start to children, but I was given a head start to become a teacher. In this program, where 48% of our staff and nearly 400 are currently former Head Start parents, and 90% of the people of color. This level of diversity is very important and needed. As a teacher of color, I see the impact I have with the children in my classroom. Being a role model for them, my children had that at PICA, and I want them for my children as they continue their education. Because of this, I support this bill. As a teacher of color, and because of the opportunity I was given, I now have credentials, a full-time job, and security knowledge that I have skills, knowledge, and desire to become this world better for my children and family. My story is proof that growing your own works. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Aguilar. And then I have a Scott Kronquist on the list. And then after that, Mary Gilbert Doherty, Denise Dietrich, and then Jim Bartholomew, and then we'll have the author come back up, and then we'll move to questions and amendments. Mr. Kronquist, state your name for the record, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and I am very pleased to testify in strong support of Representative Kunesh Poudin's bill, and we want to thank her for bringing it forward. I don't know that I have a lot to add to the powerful testimony that you just heard. This has been on our legislative platform for the last couple years, continues to be a high priority. Let me just cite one specific piece of research that I think points to why our board so strongly supports it. And this is out of Johns Hopkins University. And the study showed that having just one black teacher in third, fourth, or fifth grade reduced low-income black boys' probability of dropping out of high school by 39%. The study further showed that black students assigned to black teachers graduate from high school at far higher rates and are far more likely to take a college entrance exam. So I don't know that you need to hear much more, Madam Chair and members, than that kind of research. So thank you for the opportunity, and again, we strongly support the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Kronquist. Go ahead, state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mary Gilbert Doherty from the St. Paul Public Schools, and I just want to thank this committee for the support that they have actually given the Grow Your Own and Teacher of Color programs in the past. The St. Paul Public Schools could not have been able to continue our urban residency program without the support of this grant program. Since 2016, we've had 72 candidates that have been graduates of the program. 68 of them are currently working in the St. Paul Public Schools. Over 60, the range of the cohorts have been 66% have been candidates of color. 20 to 30% of those candidates have been bilingual. And then the other cohort that we have is special education, because that's the area that we have the greatest need and the most provisional licenses. We have a partnership with St. Thomas, which is a 15-month program. So these are candidates who have worked in our district. They may have been a fellow, a paraprofessional, a Reading Corps partner, so they understand what the job is and they're committed to our community. They start in June and go to intensive work through the summer, and then they do a four-day-a-week, actually student teaching with a master teacher for the entire school year. The residency programs across the country have shown that the academic outcomes for kids are higher and the retention for teachers is better, and that's why we chose the model for this program. The reason that we've needed the state support is because it's expensive. We do provide a teacher stipend of $21,000 plus maintain the insurance for these candidates, because without that, they actually could not afford to be in the program. And they're taking a big financial hit anyway to take a year off from their families. So there is some reduced tuition. We do provide mentoring and other support. We help with grants and applications and financial aid. But I have to say it is without a doubt, it's one of the quickest ways to take a candidate and move them from a paraprofessional position or a mentoring position to a fully licensed teacher at a living wage.
Thank you, Ms. Dougherty. And then next up.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Kim Lewis, and I'm here on behalf of Minnesota School Boards Association in support of House File 824. MSBA has long championed efforts to solve the teacher shortage. We've worked for years with that issue, and we believe that it's something that all of our school districts grapple with. Particularly, we feel that the teachers of color are in crisis mode. We just don't have the folks in the classrooms representing our student populations. We applaud the efforts to encourage individuals to enter the field of, and teaching profession, and we believe that there are some low-cost initiatives within this proposal that have strong, high impact. The statewide marketing campaign being one of them, we think will assist with recruiting and retention, getting teachers into the profession, even at a young age, to dispel some of the myths that are out there. We are also in full support of the various incentives, so with loan forgiveness, stipends, grants for the student teaching to help eliminate barriers and open pathways to get these folks into teaching. And we believe that increasing teachers of color will have a positive impact in our classrooms and help close the achievement gap. In our 2019 legislative agenda, we have fully supported the Teachers of Color Act, and we believe that it is just a tremendous thing to do for our classrooms, and we thank the author for her bill.
Thank you so much, Ms. Lewis. And I have Mr. Bartholomew. State your name for the record, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. I'd like to start by saying thank you to Representative Kunesh-Budin for meeting with us to talk about the bill, and by saying that we support the goal of House File 834, increasing the number of effective teachers of color in our classrooms. Our purpose in speaking today is specific to the provision on lines 5.15 through 5.17. This provision eliminates the requirement that teachers pass a state board-approved exam of basic skills in reading, writing, and math as part of earning a Tier 4 license. Prior to 2017 in the new tiered licensure system, all teacher candidates were required to pass a basic skills exam to earn a license. With the new licensure system, this requirement was dropped, except for teachers who want to earn a Tier 4 license. Why is it important for Tier 4 teachers to pass a basic skills exam? First, a Tier 4 license represents the highest level of licensure in the state, creating an opportunity to recognize effective teachers. Granting a Tier 4 license to someone who may not be able to pass a board-approved basic skills exam undermines the credibility of this recognition. Second, and we know this isn't intended, but eliminating this requirement sends the message that the state has to lower expectations for teachers so they can reach Tier 4 status. Frankly, we don't agree with this message. If there's a concern that teachers can't pass board-approved exams in reading, writing, and math, then we should help them develop the needed skills, not lower our expectations. In closing, we support the goal of this bill, but ask that the sentence on lines 5.15 through 5.17 be dropped as the bill moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Representative Kudosh-Podin, did you have any other testifiers want to come to the table and provide some comments, and then we'll move to member questions?
Madam Chair, I think that is all we have for testifiers.
Okay. And members, I know there's some amendments here, too. I don't know if you want to do some questions first and then offer amendments. I don't know who they belong to. So, Representative Grunhagen, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I just had a question, but, I mean, if you want to handle the amendments first, that's up to you.
Well, why don't you have a question?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I also laud the goals of this bill. The one question I have, well, I have a couple questions, actually, but you know, I served on the school board for quite some time, and we had the unsavory duty every spring to release teachers because we didn't know exactly what our enrollment would be.
Yep.
And under LIFO, you always release the newest teachers the soonest, regardless of qualifications. And I know we passed some reform for that in last session, but or the previous one. But it had to be negotiated by local school boards, so I don't think that, according to the information I have, not that many schools have adopted it, if any. If somebody knows different, they can enlighten me on that. But, okay, we have this goal here in this bill, How does LIFO affect that? I mean, you hire new teachers with different ethnic backgrounds, and then LIFO comes along, and the school board's going to be forced in many cases, because if they don't, they're locked in for the next year, to release those same teachers until they see what their enrollment is and what their needs are the next fall.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Actually, over 50% of the teacher contracts already had something in there other than just looking at seniority when they had to let teachers go even before the reform. I have a little aversion to calling it last in, first out, because usually we talk about parts, not people, when you mention that, but we'll let it go. Representative Krishvadeen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. The objective of this bill is to bring new teachers in, new teachers of color. And if they are coming in numbers that we would appreciate, let's say a school gets five new teachers, if they were to use that method that you mentioned, that means that they would continually be cut every single year. And so in this bill, we're asking that they would have an exemption, or that there would be consideration for them not to be cut, as schools are school boards have to make that very hard decision every spring.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for that clarification, too. It's been a while since I've been on the school board. But, you know, I especially appreciated the testimony of the teachers as far as role models for different ethnic groups, students. I think that's very important. And so that's one of the other reasons I like to see a lot of the intents. I would also add, though, I do, you know, as a former school board member, and I have a lot of respect for teachers. I don't think I could be one, to tell you the truth. I do have the same concerns about that line 5.15 to 5.7, where we're not, you know, we're dropping the requirement as far as passing a basic skills in reading, writing, and math in order to get a Tier 4 license. I'd like to see different ethnic backgrounds also in the school, and more teachers from that perspective. But I do think that we need to keep that requirement there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Bediner, I see Ms. Hernandez has moved up to the testifier table, too. Whoever would like to take it.
Well, I would first, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to also commend this bill for the acknowledging the value of a mentor. When I started teaching, I worked in a school that was very diverse, and I had a wonderful mentor, an African-American woman who lived in the community. And honestly, if it wasn't for her those first couple of years, I don't know that I would have been able to stick it out. The fact that she was so seasoned, she knew the community, she knew the families, she knew the students. She was able to give me a lot of feedback on my teaching so that it was more culturally relevant as well. She encouraged me. She included me in community activities and really gave me the kind of feedback and the encouragement that helped me to get on. And yet, just as you mentioned, that first year I did get cut, and it was devastating again as a single mom with three kids and just learning to get into this school. But she advocated for me, and they hired me back. And the skills and the encouragement that she gave me has really stayed with me all of these years. And if we could get a mentor like her for every one of our teachers, we would be the best state of education ever. So thank you.
Follow-up, Representative? Ms. Hernandez-Espinosa, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, Madam Chair. Well, thank you, Representative. I would like to answer a couple of your concerns there. On page 15 of the bill, line 15.1 is a particular provision that addresses the concern with additional negotiation strategies for teachers in their initial years. And so I just wanted to point that out to the committee. And I wanted to let the committee know that districts are already doing this, and bargaining units are having these conversations. The issue is that not everybody has the knowledge that they can do this. And so we're just saying
yes, you can do this, and other districts are doing it. So it's just to encourage the districts and the bargaining units to actually have that conversation because it isn't known by all districts that they could do this. As far as the requirement for moving the provision in here from moving from a Tier 3 to a Tier 4, we would like to remind the committee that the basic skills exams were initially designed for initial licensure, not for effective teachers that are in the classroom. And so our provision is really saying you've proven that you're an effective teacher in the classroom, so you're continuing to be in the classroom. And so you've proven, and your district has continue to hire you because you've proven your effectiveness in the classroom. And so prior to the 2017 session, under the leadership of many of you in this room with the restructuring of the licensure system, thousands of candidates were being kept out of the classroom because of the basic skills test that, again, not only were they meant for initial licensure, but they are I would like to see many people take a basic skills exam and see if they really are what they're meant for after candidates have gone through a preparation program and after candidates have gone through intensive student teaching protocols. So that would be my only comments. Thank you so much.
Representative Goodhagen, you had a follow-up?
Oh, just so Representative Kunitz-Podine, are you open to modifying that section or deleting it at all, that 5.15 to 5.17?
Representative Kunitz-Podine.
Madam Chair and Representative, no, we'd like to keep it in.
And Representative Erickson, you're on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And those are mostly my amendments, so we'll just wait with those until questions are finished. Thank you. I think I was the first author of the Teachers of Color bill, so I'm very proud to see that it is back and embellished and going in a really good direction. So thank you for those who helped me along the way, including MSBA several years ago or a few years ago. You know, in regard to the skills tests that are referred to on page 5, we have, you know, a wide variety of tests today that candidates can take. So, you know, what bothers me, because the research shows that for teachers to demonstrate at any time that they have a skill level in reading, writing, and math is very important. You know, we moved to that, and I believe it was under Democrats that we moved to this optional list. So you can even use your SAT score or your ACT plus writing score as long as you reach the cut score level. So, you know, I think that we should think carefully before we move to what you have in the bill, Representative Kunitz-Podine, in light of the fact that the research says it is very important that we have that baseline. But my question for you, Representative Kunitz-Podine, is, you know, Tiers 1 and 2 are really showing that we're garnering candidates who are teachers of color and American Indian. So I want to know why you didn't put more emphasis on Tier 2.
Representative
Kunitz-Podine. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. Thank you for all the hard work that you've put into this. I am picking up where others have left off, and I personally can't tell you the reason for that, but perhaps I can ask Violetta to share that information. She has worked long and hard and has probably one of the most intimate knowledge of every word, every phrase in this bill, and I would like to have her be able to share that information.
Ms. Hernandez-Espinosa?
Sorry, I lost train of thought here. Tier 1 and 2. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your question, Representative Erickson. The particular reason we haven't touched Tier 1 and Tier 2 is because from the start of the restructuring of licensure system in 2017 in conjunction with this Increased Teachers of Color Act of 2017, are on the same page as a representative. I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name. That we still want to uphold a particular level of preparation for educators. We want to have, yes, we want teachers of color, we want effective teachers. So we do have some concerns, and that is a mixed concern for the coalition. You have to remember that the councils are also working with a diverse, very diverse coalition of over 12 1,200 members. And so because there hasn't been consensus on that particular provision, we didn't want to touch something that where we didn't have consensus. But as far as the ethnic councils and particularly the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs, again, we want to have access, but also what requirements do we have, right? And what are we focusing on? Has been because we don't have consensus is basically why we haven't touched those two tiers.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do have a line of questions. So Tier 2, though, keep in mind as you have discussions, both of you at the table, that Tier 2 is really setting up for that move to Tier 3 and beyond. It is just a good starting point for those who are working on a degree and specifically in education. So I would hope that you would consider that more closely as this bill moves forward. Another question I have, and maybe Ms. Espinoza wants to answer this, because I do know that she and Mr. Spies probably wrote this bill as they helped me through the process earlier and then worked with the reviser. You've used Grow Your Own, which I am just so delighted that you're using Grow Your Own, because as Ms. Gilbert pointed out, they've had such great success with the Urban Educator in St. Paul and Grow Your Own. I happen to know the gal, she once worked for me, who started the Minneapolis Grow Your Own program, and she has done amazing work with this. But why not the alternative pathways as well? Why didn't you include that also as a way to get licensed for, especially for those mid-career that we have among our ethnicities? I think a wonderful opportunity for them to consider alternative pathways. Would you comment on why that's not included in here?
Ms. Hernandez-Espinoza?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson. I do believe that as we had it drafted, it is not excluding those programs, but I don't know if you have something to add, Paul. As far as the Grow Your Own program, one of the big major goals of this has been to recognize that we have some established non-conventional residency programs and also encourage the addition of programs. So actually the particular policy that we need is to have, you know, a particular differentiation between those established programs and the innovative, what we're calling the innovative new programs. So part of the bottleneck with the Grow Your Own program has been that it's been very specific, and it has created a bottleneck to, you know, three districts and two different colleges and universities. And a part of our big goals is to increase the number of districts participating, the number of public colleges and universities are participating, and especially greater Minnesota institutions. So because of those goals, the differentiation of the two programs in the Grow Your Own program policy changes is super important, and also we don't believe that it excludes it, but I could be wrong.
Mr. Spies, did you have anything to add to that?
Madam Chair, my name is Paul Spies with the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. Representative Erickson, thank you for the question. Similar to Ms. Hernandez-Espinoza's answer to the previous question about the testing, it's related to not having consensus within our broad coalition. There is not consensus in the coalition that alternative teacher preparation pathways that have minimal preparation before people actually become the teacher of record is a widespread agreement that that's the best way to get more teachers of color into the profession. So that is the only reason. And when you look at, all members look at page 6 of the bill summary and on the long list of endorsing organizations, we tried very hard over several months and actually years to get compromise language that everybody could agree with and support with this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Sure. Thank you. And then I want to go to Representative.
Yes, and you know, I understand what you're saying, Mr. Spies, but you know, when you think of mid-career professionals, or you think of those persons who are middle-aged, for example, moms and dads, aunts and uncles, singles, whatever, that really appeals to them. And I carried the first alternative pathway, and our intent was to get those who are either in mid-career or who are of that middle age into the classroom because they've been moms, they've been dads, well, they still are, but they had passed the time of nurturing their children at a younger age, and now we're prime for this opportunity. So, you know, I hope that you'll consider, because you have, this is a $71 million bill, I think, and so there's money in here that would allow us to also include alternative pathways. Another question I have is, when we think of AIM, I know that was Governor Representative Mariani's proposal a few years ago when we changed to the Achievement and Integration Revenue Program, you know, to use the revenue to improve equitable access to effective and more diverse teachers. So did you look at how many AIM programs have submitted plans to the department to be in compliance with that requirement? Did you look at that along the way? Perhaps Representative Kunesh-Badin could answer that. Did you look at any of those? Or Ms. Espinoza?
Whoever would like to.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm going to again turn it over to the folks that have worked the longest on this. That is before my time, and I'm not sure exactly how that was considered or incorporated or not incorporated into this bill, so I will let the experts answer that, please.
Mr. Spies.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson. The data on looking at all of the achievement integration programs and their plans, that wasn't reviewed for this, but I can tell you that, and Mr. Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts or Ms. Lewis with the Minnesota School Board Association could also verify that there is a lot more work to do in terms of the goals of the achievement and integration program, and no district has even close to equitable access to effective and diverse teachers as the 2016 state law put into effect. So, in fact, many metro area schools, as well as many rural and greater Minnesota schools, have extremely wide differences between the percentages of students of color and the percentage of teachers of color in their schools. Much wider than the gap of 4% overall in the state compared to 34% students of color in the state. And this is something that has to be a focus in the achievement and integration program as well.
Yes, and well said, Mr. Spies. Thank you, Madam Chair, because that is one of the goals of achievement and integration, or achievement and integration, is that there is the revenue to provide in a district that has that revenue program to have a more diverse teaching staff. You know, the last point I want to make, with your indulgence, Madam Speaker, is that, you know, we have to look more closely at teacher preparation programs, too, and I am so glad that we have someone in the audience today who is representing that area. In the research that I read frequently, the teacher preparation programs have to get on board now with realizing, and very, very much of your text, I think, supports that, is that we're in a new time, and we're going to have teacher candidates who come from a wide array of ethnicities, and we have to address their needs as they move through teacher preparation. And one thing I would point to is both reading and literature and math, because these are skills that are important, especially to our elementary teachers as they begin teaching our young children. And I think that teacher preparation programs, and they know that I've been encouraging them over the years to look at preparing our teachers a little differently, our candidates. But I think they have to get really serious about it now if this bill of yours goes forward, because this is making a statement about we need to have candidates in the classroom with whom our children can identify, and I think that's just super, because as Mr. Kroonquist pointed out, the data is out there that shows if you have a teacher who looks like you, you're going to perform a lot better. You're going to graduate. You're going to have a future ahead of you. But I'm not sure our preparation programs are at that same level. So I want to get that on record so they hear me and they know that this is really important as this bill moves forward, that they also are in line with what is expected of this opportunity for our children to have a teaching staff with whom they can identify more closely and have a relationship with. And that is so important. And they are the foundation for preparing our candidates. So I want them to be in line with that. And I'm sure if they're reading the same research I am, they know what I'm talking about. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do appreciate Representative Kunesh-Podein earlier mentioning the mentorship. That's a piece that was put in that I had last year. And I just want to take just a moment, because I have an amendment later, and I won't have to take it later, and that is to emphasize the importance of a good mentorship program and why I'm glad it's in this bill. Presently, we lose 2 to 3 of our new teachers in the first 5 years. I mean, that's a huge turnover. It is a very serious problem that we must address. Why are they leaving? Well, there are a lot of factors, I suppose, but one is that we are not doing enough to support these new teachers in their first years. And that's the importance of a good mentorship program to address the teacher shortage, to address the retention of teachers, and to address the future of education.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein, for bringing this bill forward. It's disappointing to say that a state that has the best education for one group of people also has the worst education for the rest. And I believe this bill gets us closer, one step closer to solving this problem. We keep talking about the achievement gap. It's not an achievement gap. It's an opportunity gap. And I want to thank all the teachers that testified. I think this bill is an important bill, and I thank you for working hard on bringing it up here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein. I think we have, Representative Herr, and then we'll move to amendments.
Maybe just a quick comment. So I know there was some discussion around lowering the standards, and I struggle a little bit with that, too, because if I have to think about myself, I think that I would have been considered somebody people lowered the standard for. If someone was going to look at the ACT scores, I scored a 21. I come from an oral language in which reading and memorizing things in a way, and I grew up speaking English, right? It became my first language, but if you were to use any kind of standardized test to kind of grade me, I would fail every single time. I was an awful test taker, but I think that much later in my life, I was identified as gifted and talented, which I would never have known based on my test scores and my abilities that people could see on paper. So I struggle with that. That is the perception that people will say we lowered their standard, but I also know that in communities of color, we're tested very differently in ways in which we are very competent, but it doesn't always show up in tests that way, and I don't know how to best be able to capture that, right? So I just wanted to make that comment. And also, maybe just to broaden this conversation just a little bit, because my daughter didn't have her first African-American teacher, and she's Hmong, clearly. And she had an African-American teacher in middle school, and it was the first time she had heard history taught from that perspective. And she was almost scared that the things that he was saying, like she felt so empowered. And to hear it that way, and it was almost as if she had to learn that it was okay to learn history from somebody else's perspective. And she told me that was the most empowering teacher she ever had. And so I think that diversity in teaching is not just to have somebody who looks like me teaching me, but to hear teachers of color from different backgrounds teaching so that we can see their perspective and take those things with us as well. So I just wanted to make sure we don't lose that in this particular bill and what it's trying to do. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative. All right, so members, we have some amendments before us. We have about 15 minutes left tops because someone's in the room after us. So who would like to claim some of the amendments?
So, Madam Chair, I'll move the A3 amendment.
Representative Erickson has moved the A3 amendment. Would you like to describe the amendment?
Well, I think it's very important that on page 2, that after curriculum and also on page 3, that we insert a line to state academic standards because we are standards-based state. And we are federally also obligated to do that. So as we develop our culturally relevant or ethnic studies curriculum, that it be also aligned with our state academic standards. And Madam Chair, on page 3, line 5, also that insertion with a little different wording, I used which must be aligned because of the way the sentence was constructed. So, Madam Chair, I would ask for support of those amendment, the A3.
Representative Erickson, Representative Kunesh Boudin, do you have any comments to that amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. We would not accept this amendment, and for a couple of reasons, we feel that it would create the use of the word curriculum is really too Eurocentric. It doesn't allow for, it won't or could down the road not allow for a lens of people of color, indigenous, and as new courses come in, it might affect how we are using that alignment to the standards. And so at this time, we would reject this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh Boudin. So we have the A3 before us, and thank you. So Representative Erickson has moved the A3 amendment, and we've had discussion. Hearing, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. And how about any further amendments? I see Representative Ertl's hand up.
Madam Chair, I'd move the A5 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Ertl. Representative Ertl has moved the A5 amendment. Would you like to go ahead and describe the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I already gave my little spiel on the importance of mentoring. So I'll just say on this that the amendment does two things. It changes on line 11, instead of saying are encouraged to must, I believe if something is very important that you need to say that it's a must, that you've got to do it. But it adds $28 million plus to increase funding to allow more teachers into the mentorship program or to be mentors, making this the must, not an unfunded mandate. The important thing is it takes nothing away from what's being done here. It doesn't take anything away from teachers of color and the program. It just adds and includes more.
Thank you, Representative Ertl. Representative Kunesh Boudin, any comments on the amendment as the author? To the full bill, sorry.
Wait,
Representative Ertl, one more comment?
I would encourage that Representative Kunesh Boudin accept this as a friendly amendment and just let K-12 finance work out the details.
very good effort, Representative Ertl. Representative Kunesh Boudin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Look at all you guys coming up with really bipartisan support here. Again, we have exception with those suggestions and would prefer not to take this amendment at this time.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh Boudin.
Madam Chair, could I just add,
Representative Ertl, one more thing.
That if this then were to be voted down, you would be on record as Democrats voting against Republicans trying to put more money into an education bill.
Good job. We are fiscally conservative, Representative. Right, so Representative Rudolph has moved has moved the A5 amendment before us. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
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 Shame.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Do we have any other amendments?
Madam Chair, I have the A2 amendment, please. I'd like to offer that.
Representative Erickson moves the A3 amendment. Would you like to discuss it, Representative Erickson?
The A2 amendment, page 6, line 16, delete Tier 3. I think it's very limiting if under this section of the bill that hiring bonuses, that the eligibility that the districts must verify be given to Tier 3 licensees. And on page 6, again, on line 26, to give districts flexibility. And I've inserted the language, a district or school may offer differing bonus amounts based on a teacher's license tier level up to the limits provided in this paragraph, which is the 8,000. And I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Kunesh Boudin to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, we would reject this amendment. We would like to make sure that our fully qualified teachers are getting the bonuses and not those at the Tier 1 or Tier 2 level. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh.
You know, Madam Chair, I believe
Representative Erickson, did you have a follow-up?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe right now that districts can provide bonuses for any level they like under the old system and probably the new system, too. So I hope that the author will consider this in the future, as I know it will be defeated.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson has moved the A2 amendment before us. We've had discussion. Hearing no further discussion, those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. I think we have one more before us who'd like to claim that.
Madam Chair, I'll offer the A1 amendment.
Representative Erickson has moved the A1 amendment. Proceed.
Madam Chair, this amendment on page 15 would change may to are encouraged to, which is usually the language, the verbiage that we use in this situation. To update the language, layoffs is not a proper term in statute. To unrequested leave of absence, we need to be consistent with statute. And after the word Indian, to clarify that that means that also includes probationary status. And I would ask for your support.
Representative Kunesh-Podein, any comments on that amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson. Would you please maybe give me a little bit more understanding or clarification about that, including those on probationary status in this amendment?
Representative Erickson.
Representative Kunesh-Podein, they're going to, you know, a school district or a school is going to negotiate additional retention strategies or protections from the unrequested leave. So we should be looking at teachers of color and teachers who are American Indian being at their probationary level. That would be what would make common sense to do that, as long as they are negotiating this and we don't know what their teaching status is.
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, I think I would also reject this amendment. I'm just not clear that that is the intent of the this part of the bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein. We have the A1 amendment. Representative Erickson has moved the A1 amendment before us. Seeing no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The amendment, the A1 amendment is not, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Of no around here.
So, members, we don't have any further, members, we don't have any further amendments before us. Representative Kunesh-Podein, do you have any final comments you'd like to make? Or actually, I should double check. Are there any more questions? Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, Madam Chair, I just have a, technical oral amendment I'd like to make, if possible, if I could explain.
Yes, quickly. Otherwise, this is being laid over, and we could look at that at a later time, but if you want to briefly describe it.
Well, the...
it's going to waste meaning to write. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having my back, guys. All right.
Reverend Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just... You know, there's been advancements in biology and medical science, and one of the and what they show now is that we are not different races, okay? We are one race, the human race. That is a biological and medical science fact, which means all of you are related to me one way or another. I know that might give some severe consternation, but if you look far enough in your tree, I'll be sitting there, okay? And I don't believe in trees, by the way, sitting in trees at least. But anyway, no, on a serious note, we are different ethnic groups, okay? We come from different ethnic backgrounds, but we're one race, the human race.
Representative Grunhagen, could you get to your oral amendment, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
So if we want to be biologically and medically scientific accurate, and I'll give you an example on line 3.16, on page 3, it says, respectful toward, 3.6, it says, inclusive and respectful towards all racial and ethnic groups. My oral amendment would be to strike the word racial and, therefore it would read, inclusive and respectful toward all ethnic groups. There are 9 different places in this bill that I have identified a similar problem. And so, Madam Chair, I would move that oral amendment to make sure that we're accurate biologically and from a medical science standpoint.
Representative Kunesh-Podein, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that that would be something that we have to go back and take a look at and review, and I'm happy to work with you on that and have further conversations. Thank you. So at this time, I would reject it.
Representative Grunhagen, go ahead.
If there's a chance, let's vote.
Representative Grunhagen, are you okay with waiting and discussing offline with
Sure, I'll withdraw it and I'll discuss it with
Thank Representative you. Thank you. Seeing no more questions at the table, we have about 2 minutes. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify in favor or opposed? All right. So we have, I renew my motion that House File 824 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Is there any further discussion of that motion?
You can vote, yes.
Hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no.
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Quick announcements. We looked at the room, and we're going to start on Friday at 9:30 a.m. So split the difference a little bit. And so we're here on Friday from 9:30 a.m. We'll go through, I think, the first three bills, try to break for lunch for 30 minutes. Thank you. And then Mr. Benjamin was just reminding me that the amendment deadline then is 9:30 a.m. tomorrow.
We're ready.
And then, I'm sure you are.
I'm ready.
And then you should be getting stuff in your email about the scheduling for next week. And we had some room changes too. So with that, we are adjourned.